Thanks for downloading from the BBC. To find other downloads or more information, go online.
bbc.co.uk/5live.
Kermode's not here. Andrew Collins has one question for you, Andrew. Do you watch television?
I watch too much television, Colin.
Lovely, because Kermode, you nothing.
Yeah, he has denounced television, hasn't he? He believes that television isn't as good as films. So, but unfortunately, you have to leave the house sometimes to go see films, whereas you can watch everything at home. I'm telling you, never leave.
Exactly. Deadwood, you know, The Unit.
There's too much. That's
Kirby
the trouble
enthusiasm.
With television. Way too much. Way too much good American television on our television screens.
Exactly. Well, let's talk about films, first of all, and we'll talk to our guest, but let's have a nice warm hello. Now, a dream for most young men to appear in the same film as James Bond, you'd imagine. And that dream has come true for one young actor who stars alongside Daniel Craig in the new film out today, Flashbacks of a Fool, which Andrew's seen as well. Harry Eden is that young man, and he's with us now. How are you?
I'm good, you?
Good. Yes, I'm well. Quite tired, actually, but very happy. I've enjoyed the show today. Now, first of all, your father drove you in today, I believe. He's very excited.
Yeah, a little bit, yeah.
Where did this excitement come from? Is he a 5Live-ite?
Pardon?
Is he a 5Live-ite? Does he like listening during the day?
Yeah, I suppose. No, I was looking forward to it because I haven't really done much radio before and I've never done it before, so I'm looking forward to it.
And your dad brings you. Now, he was probably, Mr. Eden was probably thinking, great, I'll get to meet Mark Kermode. I'll get to meet Simon Mayo. He's a hero of mine. He's Sony nominated. Who does he get? The Irish bloke and Andrew Collins. That's the way it goes. Flashbacks of a Fool. Harry, tell us a little bit how you become involved with this movie.
Probably about 18 months before the film got going, I had a meeting with Bailey, the director, and I was just talking to him like I would in a meeting, no reading the script or anything. He didn't even have the green light then. And then about 8-9 months later, he rang me back, and I went meeting for him again. I didn't even think about it because you forget. And then he gave me the part there, and then I couldn't believe it. And I just it was brilliant. And then I worked very closely with him from then onwards, and it was just brilliant.
What have you done before, Harry, before doing this?
Well, I started acting when I was about 9, and I started off by adverts, and then I got my first TV programme, and then I got my first film called Pure, and then I've done a film called Peter Pan. Mm-hmm. I've done a film called Oliver Twist. I played the Artful Dodger in that.
Lovely.
And then
I can see that.
And then I've done a few other things when I was about 14, 15.
Your publicist has been telling me about various sporting things that we'll get to eventually with you. But how did you find acting in a film with so many established and illustrious co-stars? And how was Daniel?
It was great. Daniel Craig, I was a bit nervous meeting him first because he's Daniel Craig. And I love all these films like Jane Bond, the brilliant, Layer Cake, and I met him, but he made me feel very comfortable being around him, and I had a great time.
I'd imagine when Connery walks into a room. Andrew, have you been in a room with Connery?
I was nearly in a lift with Clint Eastwood. Isn't that good enough?
No. He was never James Bond. I'm imagining every James Bond would fill a room, you know, apart from Lazenby.
What do you mean apart from Lazenby?
Come on.
He's a model. He walks like a panther.
Do you know what my producer has just said? My best Bond ever. What are you doing? Are you watching with the sound down? Anyway, I'd imagine he fills a room when he comes in. Does he come across as he was made to play James Bond?
Yeah, definitely. He's very cool, and he's just brilliant. Not cool trying to be, just the way he is.
Now, you know, as a child actor, so to speak, I mean, you were 11 and Pure, and you won the British Independent Film Awards Most Promising Newcomer. This is an adult role for you, for to say maybe your first adult role. There were sex scenes involved. How did you find that, especially the intimate scenes?
Bailey, the director, said to me, he said, do you mind about all the sex scenes? I went, no, because I wanted the film. I wasn't going to say
that. Because I'm 18.
And then he said, I got to South Africa where we shot it, and my first actual scene was the sex scene. I was like, I didn't know anyone and I had no clothes and I felt a bit embarrassed, but it was a close set and it was fine, really.
Get a wee bit of Isaac Hayes on, everything it'll be okay. Now, as we said, you play this younger version of Daniel Craig's character, and you're growing up in the 70s. You live in the 70s, and did you live in the 80s?
No.
So you were born 1990?
Yeah.
God, I've never felt so old.
Don't do the numbers, it's just upsetting.
It just punishes me. I'm staying in tonight, that's it. I've got my excuse. So you got Roxy Music, David Bowie featuring heavily. Was there research into that for you, or maybe through your parents, did you have that music knowledge?
No, I didn't really know anything about the 70s, and especially the music, because it's not my kind of music, but Bailey, the director, said, make sure you listen to it every day. He gave me an album. I made out I listened to it every day, but I didn't. But I got dressed the first day, and there was high heels in the corner. I was like, they're not for me, surely. And then we got to wear them. I was like, oh, what's going on here? But they were a bit uncomfortable, the clothes, but I got used to them after about 8 weeks.
So that's, it's interesting because, you know, not only is it your first adult role, but you're being taken back to a time that you're not familiar with. It's a lot of weight. Did you feel like there was a lot of weight in your shoulders for your first massive adult role like this?
Not really. I didn't really think about it like that, but I've been back in time like Oliver Twist and Bleak House are done, so no, not really.
Okay, that's good.
You can't remember those times.
No. You've got a 1.5 handicap, is that right, in golf?
Yeah, 1 handicap.
One. Look at that, typical golfer, you know, you miss it by 0.5, you're in trouble. But surely at 18 and you spent most of your time acting rather than playing golf, with a little bit more practice, is that not pro standard?
I could turn pro if I want to at the moment, but I'll probably turn pro either this year or next year. But
wow! So is it a chance we could be having you back here to talk about golf and you're playing golf?
It'd be lovely if it had happened.
What's your passion like, acting or golf? How do you divide them? And you're not allowed to say both.
I'm probably doing. I'm a bit better in acting at the moment because golf is so many boys my age are better than me and the same standard as me. So at the moment it's acting, but I see how it goes.
Is it hard to get out and play the amount of holes you'd like to?
No, I play. When I don't do a film, I just play every day. So
wow.
What about in South Africa? Would you play out?
No, because we were there for 7 weeks and it was pretty much every day.
Really?
Normally I get to when I go away for a film, but because you're golf, you need so much practice. When you do a film, it kind of ruins you for a couple of months. Gets you. Doesn't make you feel right, and it's hard to hit a ball. But
and you're out of you get out of your groove.
Yeah, that's right.
Mm-hmm. So what about the Yes Master? Did you watch it?
Yeah, I watched it. I had the premiere on Sunday, so I taped it. But Trevor Immelton walked away with it, really.
Yeah,
I've been looking forward to it all year, and it wasn't the best Masters ever.
It was one of those moments, though, wasn't it? People do throw the Masters away, and I think it was the 16th he put the ball in the water or something. So here we go again. But he kept his head about him.
My mum and dad will be listening in to hear me, and they'd be more interested in this. So
absolutely.
Keep it up. Forget about me.
That's okay. I'm fine with that. You know what's interesting as well? If I think it's a company magazine, they do the eligible bachelors. If they'll be listening and making that list up now, hey, don't come much more eligible than this. It could be a golf pro, top actor at 18, already familiar with the love scenes, down to earth bloke, good looking. Is everyone going okay in that front, okay with the ladies?
Yes, okay, thanks.
And you know what I mean, he's got a cool demeanour about him as well. Thank you very much for coming on the show.
That's great, thank you.
Much appreciated, Harry, and very much good luck with the film as well.
Thank you.
Good luck with the film.
He's great in the film, I can say that while he's here.
Brilliant. Well, you can say that now, we'll review it properly later.
Yeah, but I'm being sincere.
We'll do the real review later.
Yeah.
When he's not here.
He really is good.
Is he better than Daniel Craig?
Are we on mic?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's better than Daniel Craig.
He's got a better part than Daniel Craig.
Wonderful.
It's mostly about him, more about him than it is about the adult Daniel Craig.
Flashback of a fool.
Very nice of you.
Looking forward. So on the way home in the car, you and your dad can listen to nice things being said about you.
Yeah, it'll be safe to put the radio on. It's okay.
Thanks for coming in, mate.
Thanks a lot.
Cheers.
There you go. And that's the... Nice to meet you. You see, every other guest just leaves straight away. He stays, shakes hands. That's what I like to see. Very good. Okay, let's do the top 10 movies as people are going to see them as we speak. We'll go through those. We'll get some travel and then we'll get into the new releases. Okay, let's take you through the UK box office top 10 with a word from Andrew on each. And yeah, I'm so out of shape going to the cinema. I'm looking forward to this. I want educated. Andrew, I want you to take me under your wing and educate me.
I've been doing a bit of gardening, so I'm just telling you that in advance in case I haven't seen every single film.
Okay, I start at number 10, Pathology.
Pathology, yeah, that's about pathology. That's one I was doing the garden when that came out.
Wonderful. Number 9, Shine a Light. Don't say
Shine a Light. Now, there's a film, you see. I've heard some slightly grumbly reviews of this. It's a Rolling Stones concert movie, but if you like the Rolling Stones or even are interested in a band who aren't 20, like all the other bands these days, then you must go and see it. Mm. It's a fantastic record of a band who are still doing it. And the elegance of Mick Jagger is something to be seen.
Where does it stand beside other things that we've seen? Of course, maybe, you know, the big one, obviously, is the Joy Division movie.
Yeah.
Seen the Johnny Cash movie. This is obviously different.
Because it's a document rather than a kind of a fictionalised version. You just get what it actually looks like on stage at a very small gig. This is at the Beacon Theatre in New York, so you don't normally get to see the Stones at a place so small. And we're right there with them. You're right up close with Keith Richards. You can see the lines on it. You can see the lines on his face from the back, actually. But you can really get into them. You can virtually sort of ride through the lines in his face.
With decent binoculars, you can see that from here to Bermuda.
It's very he spits a cigarette out. Oh, he's still cool.
Wonderful.
Even at 79.
We can compare it to the Rock and Roll Circus. Either way, it's the 9th most popular movie with the UK box office. We go to Never Back Down at number 8, Andrew.
Yeah, I would say I've planted a couple of extra plants in the front garden.
Oh,
and I put stones around the bottom.
Is that going well?
I'm just just trying to avoid mentioning the films I haven't seen.
Seven, Horton Hears a Who.
Yeah, that's for the kids. And actually, a very nicely animated film based on the Dr. Seuss stories. High quality voice cast, Jim Carrey, that kind of thing.
That's the Jim Carrey one. And he's got a lot of plaudits, hasn't he?
It's the safe bet if you have kids to keep quiet.
Right. Which there are many of. Yeah. Six. At number six in the UK box office, Leatherheads.
Yeah, Leatherheads. If you like George Clooney as much as I do, which is a hell of a lot, you might just about squeeze yourself into this, but it is about the birth of American football, which is not for everyone. And it's got Renee Zellweger in it, which is certainly not for everyone.
Exactly. At number five, Step Up 2, The
Step
Streets.
Step Up 2, yeah. Well, if you like kind of dancing and you're young, then you maybe want
to dance. Is that
what
that all... Yes, is there a dance-off?
I think so, I don't know, probably.
Does the couple from... Let me just guess.
I watched some telly as well, don't forget.
I never saw Step Up 1 or Step Up 2, and I've no intention of, but am I right in sending Step Off 2? What happens is the underdog couple come back to win a dance off at the end, and then they cry and then they probably kiss.
You don't need me, Colin.
Exactly. Yeah. It's got to happen. Right, we're nearly at the top four, not quite. The Spiderwick Chronicles at four. How are those daffodils, or did you see this?
No, that's all right. And, you know, this is one of those films, lots of little monsters in it, and it's about a kid. It's played by Freddie Highmore, who was in Finding Neverland, and he's a very fine little child actor, so worth going to see if you're an adult and have to take kids along, because he will not make you feel ill.
It's good. One of those movies that, you know, the kids will want to see, but also as the parents, it challenges them a little bit.
It's a quality kids film.
Okay, so far that sounds like the one you're most excited about before the top three.
Who knows?
Let's see what happens now. The third most popular movie in the UK. I say film, I don't like movie. You know, I don't
say film.
I don't say sidewalk, do you?
No.
Exactly.
Nor do I.
Or oregano.
Do you use the phrase ahead of?
Yeah.
Don't.
Okay, I'll stop. What should I say instead?
I don't know, in advance of.
Okay,
that's
in advance
much
of.
Simpler.
All right, well, just say movies. Number three.
Before.
Before. 27 Dresses at three.
27 Dresses is a rom-com for sort of teenagers, really. Okay. Yeah.
That's got to be like a rated PG job, is it?
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's not for kids. It's for people who are older than kids. And
but not quite old enough to be adults.
No way.
Number two, Son of Rambo.
Yeah, Son of Rambo is sweet, actually, because you know, this is a film that we talked about, flashbacks of a fall set in the 70s. This is set in the 80s. So you can be slightly younger and be nostalgic about growing up in the 80s. And it's about these kids who decide to make a home movie of Rambo. And it's a real treat. It's an unexpected treat.
Good. I've got to see that. To see that. Right, UK box office number one film is 21.
Unbelievably, a film about people playing cards, effectively. It's one of these gambling...
Is it like blackjack?
It's about a con that's worked out by some maths students who work out something about counting cards.
Oh, yeah.
But it's amazing how big it is. Kevin Spacey's in it. He's kind of propping it up in terms of star quality. But nevertheless, it is basically about people playing cards. And if that appeals, and it obviously does to a lot of people, off you go to the cinema.
Does that... it may not be, and don't worry if you don't know this. Is that based on the true story? They had the chains...
True story, I believe.
Yeah, I know all about that. They used to bring him down the house, isn't it? Yeah, it's the book. They had to change the whole system of how to play blackjack.
Yeah.
Which is annoying, because I was just two cards away from working it out, and now, you know, I'm in oblivion now.
You've got to know your maths. I'm useless on maths.
You didn't enjoy this film, did you?
No, it's just I don't really get off on cards films, really. You know, Casino's slightly different. I liked Casino, but that's mainly about killing people.
Yeah. You know, we're in the next 2 weeks, that's when most of your spring flowers are going to bloom. The daffodils are out already. Some of the main ones will come through now. They'll light the next couple of weeks. Yeah. So be spending this weekend.
Hey, do you know, oddly enough, all the good films are suddenly coming out in a kind of bottleneck today. Yeah. So, you know, things are picking up.
We're talking movies here on BBC Radio 5 Live. Andrew Collins is with me. Harry Eden was in the studio, the 18-year-old co-star of the film Flashback to Fools. Should we listen to a clip of it first, do you think?
Yeah, let's get into the mood of the film.
Okay. Here it is.
Where's my wallet?
Where's my wallet?
On the dresser.
Hi, Sister Jean, it's Joe. Sure.
How can you spend $1,000 on the 976 line? I don't get it. You're Joseph Scott, who every woman wants, and you waste your money on the 976 line.
Because I can pretend to be someone else. Oh, no, not you, Sister Jean, someone else. I need some tickets. I'm at home. Now? Great, thank you. I'll see you in a bit. Bye. Bye.
Don't you have any philosophies in life apart from self-indulgence? You're the most self-indulgent damn fool I've ever met. I thought you'd given up.
I did give up. And then I started again.
There you go, Flashback to Fool. What do we think about this movie, Andrew? You said you thought that Harry Eden particularly impressed you.
He's good. He looks younger in real life than he looks on the screen. He plays the same age. He's obviously supposed to be it's a coming of age film, really. But it starts off with Daniel Craig now playing a movie star in Hollywood who is living the kind of life that Hollywood stars don't really live anymore, because they all live on mineral water, don't they?
Yeah.
Macrobiotic diets. He's like an old fashioned movie star. When you see him, he's kind of naked, face down on his bed, two airheaded women. And I say that they're supposed to be. They're talking about nose jobs and septums. They're leaving in their sports car. He's face down on his bed, and his black housekeeper comes in and wakes him up. Now, you've heard her there. She's spouting a lot of wisdom. He's throwing it all away. He's urinating his career up the wall because he's taking a lot of drugs and drinking and generally being a bad behaved man. When he actually holds his head up for the first time, Daniel Craig, he looks more like Geordie, the character he played in Our Friends from the North, than he does James Bond. Although I don't know whether this is the reason why the film was made, but he gets up naked and walks nakedly into the shower.
Fully frontal.
Yeah, not fully frontal, from behind. We're watching from behind. But, you know, a lot more than you would see in a James Bond film, if that is something that interests you.
Am I wrong? Did we not see him, sort of the first shot of him as James Bond? Was he not with a towel wrapped around him?
Oh, yeah, but this is actually a naked bottom.
He's got
a finely toned body, you know. Yeah. It'd be a waste to cover it up in a big smock.
Exactly.
But anyway, this is the framing device for the film. It's also a very useful way of selling the film, because Daniel Craig has produced it. He's obviously got it made by saying, yes, I'll be in it. And it all begins with Daniel Craig, and then the whole thing is in flashback, or a huge chunk of it is in flashback. That's when we find Harry, who plays him as a young boy, aged 18.
Before we get on to Harry, which we'll do in just a second, it always rings alarm bells for me when you say it's the first time the actor is produced or the first time the actor is directed, because a lot of times it's based on the name on the poster rather than the quality of the script.
Yeah, and I think in this case, he obviously liked the look of it. It's a mate of his, apparently, the director, first time feature director, and obviously wanted to help him get it off the ground, and it will. And actually, once you get into the meat of it, which is the flashback, that's when the film, for me, takes off. You've seen a million films where it's some kind of, you know, rich, powerful, successful Hollywood star in Hollywood actually feeling slight sense of self-disgust. We've seen that a million times. But once you get the flashback to what turns out to be South Africa, but is clearly supposed to be an English coastal town, and it's really about a small community and what goes on there. I don't want to give too much away what goes on there, but it's basically, as I say, his coming of age. You mentioned Roxy Music. He loves Roxy Music and David Bowie, and at one point, you know, a girl paints makeup on his face and does his hair and makes him mime to a Roxy Music song, which is a fine little piece of sort of, you know, teen life. And it really rang true to me. Obviously, I came of age in the 70s as well, although not in a dramatic fashion as he does. I don't want to say any more than that. And, you know, you find out why Daniel Craig, even though he's got everything, is still troubled and unhappy and single. It all goes back to what happened to him in his childhood. So it's a kind of a psychologist's wet dream, this film.
So back to Harry Eden then. You know, obviously he's in here, but what great thing about the Simon Mayo show, the best authors in the world, if they write a bad book, they get told. But you thought his character just had a lot more juice to it.
Well, he's very good. You know, it's a tough part to do, because you have to be, you know, you're playing an 18-year-old, you have to be innocent, you have to sound convincingly innocent, because he lives in this kind of faraway place. He's not a city boy. He's come from this very, very small, perhaps slightly unreal coastal community where there are three or four wooden shacks and everybody knows each other. But nevertheless, that's what makes it interesting, you know, because he ends up in Hollywood completely isolated from everybody else and living by the sea. So the ocean is the kind of linking device. So I think it's a very well put together film. It's very breezily acted. You've got a fantastic British cast. Helen McCrory, Keely Hawes, Jodie May, James Darcy, Amelia Fox, Mark Strong. It's an amazing cast. You know, this helps, because these are some of these really small parts. Keely Hawes, who I love, she plays a part, you know, she's only on screen a few scenes, but brings a huge amount of authority to that part.
And where's it going to do well? Is this film, it's a big budget, it's Miramax, isn't it? So
yeah.
What's it going to do? Are the Americans going to take this film? Is it going to make their top 10 billboard?
They might take to it, because, you know, Daniel Craig is now an international star. You know, we owned him for a bit. We don't own him anymore. Yeah. He's owned by the world. So it will help it open bigger than it would have done otherwise, because otherwise it would just have been sold as a small town story. Mm. Whereas now it's got this, as I say, the framing device sets it up as a Hollywood story.
So if you take Daniel Craig out of it, say put an unknown but very talented British actor in there, would it remain much more?
Less people will go and see it, if that was the case, but it wouldn't make it a worse film necessarily. Mm-hmm. Craig has an amazing presence. He plays a film star very well, and he also plays a craggy, drug addicted film star very well. But nevertheless, all the action happens in the past, and that's what it's about. Did you see Velvet Goldmine?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, there's a touch of Velvet Goldmine about it. You know, teenagers getting into glam rock in the androgyny of glam rock. It's a really interesting period, I think.
Andrew Collins is with me. We're talking movies at the moment. You're talking about Velvet Goldmine, and I actually wore, you know, the purple jumpsuit when I was presenting the Kerrang Awards. That actual jumpsuit. I didn't know it was until the day, and then somebody said, that's it.
And did it take you back to a time that you don't remember?
Yes, exactly. And the clue was, weren't it? I didn't know what it meant or anything. I always think it's important when you talk about films, and we talk about films, of who would actually go and see the thing. And you know, what's the profile of who should spend money to see this, and who should stay away from it?
Do you know, if it was on that thing that Mark Kermode never watches, the television, it would be watched by plenty of people, I think. It would be seen as a quality kind of one-off drama, I think, on television. Because it's on at the cinema, then it's a harder sell, I think. You know, you've got to get people out of their houses, you've got to get them in through the doors. So Daniel Craig will do that. Those going for a Daniel Craig film will be disappointed in that he's not in it all the way through.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So it's worth knowing that, I think, because you don't know what anyone to come out feeling hoodwinked. You know, really, you don't want people coming out of your film going, well, I liked it, but, you know, I went in under false pretenses. So
and I felt hoodwinked.
Yeah, don't go for Daniel Craig unless you're desperate to see his pert bottom, which you will see. And in fact, you could see that in the first 5 minutes and then leave. Okay. You paid your money. The film company won't mind.
Garen has sent an email in. It's mail@bbc.co.uk. The text is 85058. Let us know what you think of what Andrew's saying, especially about that top 10, maybe the two or three that Andrew missed.
Pathology.
Pathology. What's it about?
What's it like? I can guess what it's about.
You've got to know.
I know what it's about, but I want to know what it's like, please.
What were the other ones? You hadn't seen Never Back Down either.
No. So those two, we're very keen to know. And Step Up, Part 7.
Step Up 2.
So people have seen it. Loads of people have seen it. It's in the top 10. So please, I'd love to know.
Okay, 85058, mail@bbc.co.uk. Grant says that I saw Son of Rambo and absolutely loved it. It brought back fond memories of all the fun and ridiculously dangerous things I did as a child. Appropriately, on my way to see the film, I fell flat on my face in a moving escalator while I was trying to run up it the wrong way. Full stop. I am 35. Full stop. Thanks. Keep those coming in, both your emails and texts. 85058 mail@bbc.co.uk. So it's a very positive review, flashback of a film. I can't tell you about the Don't Stand Down or whatever that was called. We're still waiting on a review on that.
Somebody's seen it. It's in the charts.
They're not texting in. 85058. However, Neil in Belfast.
They're embarrassed.
I know. Neil in Belfast says, don't ever go and watch that Step Up film. Your brain will melt. Your eyes come over with cataracts. It was so bad, even my other half, who's a proper girly girl, said sorry to me. So thank you very much for that. Keep them coming in. 85058. We're going through various new releases with Andrew here. We've done flashbacks of a fool. I think we should probably do In Bruges now. Terrible name.
Yeah, but it's about exactly that. It's about two hitmen who are in Bruges, the medieval Belgian city. Now we found out there. I didn't realise that Flashbacks Were a Fool, set on the English coast, was filmed in South Africa.
Wow.
Now this is partly to do with money. Well, mostly to do with money. That's why they do it. So when a film is set in Bruges, you think, well, it's probably filmed in Toronto,
yeah,
as most films are. This is actually filmed in Bruges, so at least you get to see Bruges, because it's a character in the film as much as Venice is in Don't Look Now.
Oh, right. So
it's one of those films you almost want to go to Bruges now, so you can kind of walk
beautiful
where
place.
Colin Farrell and Brendan Gleeson. Now, one of those, Brendan Gleeson, I would say one of the finest Irish actors I can think of on screen. Absolutely terrific in almost everything he does, even in small parts. Well, here it's a two-header with him and Colin Farrell, who I would have said is a rather overrated Hollywood actor, but he's back on form because he's got good material. So let's just hear the setup to the film. They arrive in Bruges, they're hitmen. We don't really know what's just happened, but this is the setup. This is Brendan Gleeson and Colin Farrell.
I think you have a couple of rooms booked under Cranham and Blakely.
Yes. No, we have one room booked.
Oh.
One twin room. Booked for 2 weeks.
2 weeks?!
Do you have another room?
No, I'm afraid we're fully booked with Christmas. Everywhere is fully booked.
Okay. It's very pretty.
I'm not being funny. We can't stay here.
We've got to stay here until he rings.
Well, what if he doesn't ring for 2 weeks?
Then we stay here for 2 weeks.
For 2 weeks? In a room like this? With you?
Amazing. It sounds like a comedy, and that's certainly how it plays out. It's the first feature film directed by Martin McDonagh, who's a playwright, really. The Lieutenant of Inishmore is his most famous, and he obviously got these two together. It's basically an Irish film, but set in Belgium, and these two are just brilliant, sparring all the way. Colin Farrell's character is just miserable. He doesn't want to be in Bruges. He doesn't get excited by the sights, whereas Brendan Gleeson, slightly older, more circumspect, says, well, look, we're here. Let's go tourist. Go be tourists. And so they go around, he drags drags, he's like a son, he's like a surrogate son, he drags him around the sights, and all he wants to do is get out of there. There's a deeper, darker secret to this film, which I obviously won't reveal, which kind of bubbles to the surface, and what they're doing is waiting for a phone call from their boss, played by Ralph Fiennes. He's called Harry, so it's effectively like, it's like Beckett, it's like Waiting for Godot. Mm-hmm. You don't see or hear from Harry for a while, you just know the phone call is coming in, which means they can't leave the hotel room. And all Colin Farrell's character wants to do is go out and get drunk, drink Belgian beer, which actually is a reasonable response to being in Belgium, I think.
I would say so. I was going to ask you that next. I was going to say, well, there's got to be something beyond just that relationship.
There really is, yeah.
Actually, the backdrop of the city.
No, you're right. But I could have watched 2 hours of those two. Mm-hmm. The script is absolutely sparkling.
And the chemistry works.
Oh, it's brilliant. The chemistry is so good. I heard an interview that Brendan Gleeson did after the film was made, and he obviously has just taken Colin Farrell under his wing. He loves him. He absolutely loves him. You probably understand the north side, south side Dublin thing. I think they're both north side.
Oh, yeah.
North siders.
Proper Dublin.
Yeah, proper Dublin.
Proper Dublin.
Proper Dublin. I think that's the bond that they have. I'm pretty sure I'm right, that they're both from the north.
Within the shadow of Croke Park.
Yeah, so I think that they've bonded, and you can just feel it in this film. It's fantastic. Now, Ralph Fiennes, who you wouldn't normally think of as the gangster, is a gangster. If I said it was a gangster movie, you go,
Oh, here we go.
But it kind of isn't, really. It's so clever and so interesting and so funny. And Ralph Fiennes' character, he's basically playing this boss in the same way that Ben Kingsley played the boss in Sexy Beast. Do you see Sexy Beast?
Yes.
Amazing, isn't it? You think, what is Ben Kingsley doing?
Yeah.
Well, I think Ralph Fiennes has watched that and thought, I can do a bit of that.
Clips from Sexy Beast. No,
and you can't play many clips of Ralph Fiennes in this. There's a lot of adult language in it. And once he arrives, because you know he arrives, I'm not giving anything away. Once he arrives and you find out what's happened before and what's happening next, it takes on a whole new mould, this film. It becomes a different kind of film. But you care so much about those two characters, by the way, by the time this happens, you'll go with it. And I just think it's terrific.
It has to be said, on Sexy Beast, there's some of the best swearing ever.
Brilliant swearing.
Of course, one particular scene, obviously.
Yes.
Ian in Ireland, it's out already in Bruges, in Ireland, and he says that ham, more ham than you find in a supermarket's cold counter. Colin Farrell can't do comedy. Mildly better when it gets bloody.
There is a bloodiness to the later parts, and I think that's not fair. Personally, I would disagree. I think it's not hammy. I think he really, really... You believe him. You believe this part. As I say, he's got a secret. I think when it comes out, yeah, it's good dramatic acting and good comic acting.
I can't see the whites of Ian's eyes, but I can't see yours, and I'm going to go with you in this because I can see that there's a craze. You've got to go and see this film.
I was really, really surprised and excited by it. You know, I really thought Colin Farrell would bring it down and ruin it, but he didn't.
That's great when you go in with an expectation that he's going to botch it up and he doesn't. We'll talk about botched in a second, actually. But Never Back Down, thank you very much to Philip Davies, who says it is awful. Too long and extremely obvious throughout. It was billed to be as a Fight Club type movie, which I enjoyed thoroughly and found very thought provoking. However, it was more like a poor modern day version of The Karate Kid. The only good thing about it was we watched it for free as the cinema cocked up seat allocations.
That's very good.
We had planned to see 21, which is number one in the box office. So that's good.
Our people are out there, you see, because I don't go and see every film that comes out like Mark Kermode does. He lives for this. It's his job. He does it every week here and on News 24. Which I've got to do afterwards. So for me, I go and see the films I want to see. So things do slip through the net. We need these people.
Some film reviewers have a life, Andrew. Don't apologise for that just because Kermode lives in the cinemas.
I watch some telly.
Yeah, we've got the top 10 done now. It's as simple as that. Yeah. That's good.
And
it's good
anyway, to see. We're grateful to the people.
Definitely. There wasn't that many you were excited about in the top 10. It's good to see that we're 2 for 2 in the new releases. Some quick texts coming in here at the moment on various subjects that we've talked about. Nigel says, I think Her Majesty's Secret Service is one of the best Bond movies, but A&B was definitely the worst Bond. There you go. More people send Pathology, You've Got to Stay Away From. Mark in Glasgow is one of them. Tom and Penny in the M6 say they agree with you. Son of Rambo, great film. Film of the year for them so far. What's Wrong with A&B? Chris says in Clandiff. Maybe we should leave that one now. Maybe, I'm right. You're right as well. Whatever. Brosnan says a 49-year-old. There you go. Because it flies in the face of what you said.
Brosnan being the best. Brosnan's really good.
Andy Mack says that. I think so. I think he suffered from a couple of very bad Bond scripts, to be honest.
Dalton was the one who almost sank it.
He did, didn't
Not
he?
His fault.
There was no secret device was going to get him out of that one.
He went through the political correctness years. It was really unfortunate. He wasn't allowed to have sex with lots of women. He could only have one girlfriend in the film, and it was not his fault.
It's a good time to be Bond again. Shane in Northampton says, Pathology was sick and slick.
my hometown.
Very good. They go Step Up 2 as well. Truly awful. We're getting a lot of that coming in at the moment. Right, where do you want to go next? Should we go Happy Go Lucky?
Happy Go Lucky, yeah. Who can believe another great film this week?
Well, should I do an email on it first?
We've got an email.
Okay. Yeah. Stevie in Glasgow says, as much as I don't like to judge a book by its cover or judge a film by its director, you could not pay me to go and see a Mike Lee film as he constantly uses the most annoying female characters.
Well,
Secrets and Lies, Vera Drake, Life is Sweet, all have the same infuriating, unbelievable, whining, ridiculous, nasal female leads. And after seeing the trailer for Happy Go Lucky, I'll pass. Does anyone else hold this view? Andrew?
That is very interesting. And do you know what? Because his films are pretty much all set in London. He's not a Londoner, but he's his adopted city, and his films are set in London, so they always tend to be London characters. And he does have a tendency to allow his actors, not just the female ones, but especially the female ones, to adopt a kind of almost cartoon London accent that you just don't hear, except in Mike Lee films. Now, I can live with that, personally. I love Mike Lee. If he wasn't alive, I would just, you know, life would be a poorer place. So let's hear a bit of the accent, shall we, by Sally Hawkins, who plays Poppy in this film, and it's all about her. It's one of those films, just like Naked was all about Johnny, this is all about her. Now, just judge the accent for yourself.
Is this going to be a regular occurrence, chopping and changing?
Sorry, Scott. Something came up.
Well, I've got a life too, you know.
I had to make an appointment.
Isn't this an appointment?
I couldn't help it.
The road to hell is paved with good intentions.
Sounds like fun. Having a bad day, are you?
I had a bad pupil this morning.
Oh, no. What'd you do?
He was late, he refused to pay his money, he slammed the door and he swore at me.
You shouted at him, did you?
I drove off. I'm not teaching him again.
You show him.
He's rude, he's arrogant, he's overconfident and he's too street.
You don't like that, do you?
He's been overindulged and encouraged to express himself.
Express himself? Quick, chop his hands off.
Do you know what it means when they express themselves?
Go on.
How little do they know? How little do their mothers know? And they smell.
It's not easy being you, is it, eh?
I'm getting the point.
Yeah, Eddie Marsan, an amazing actor. He also had a smaller part in Vera Drake, which was the last Mike Lee film. He plays the driving instructor there, who's kind of the diametric opposite of Poppy. She's a primary school teacher. She goes out with her friend. She's single. She's 30. She's happy with being 30. Yeah. She's happy with being single.
She's happy-go-lucky.
She's totally happy-go-lucky. It's one of those film titles that tells you all you need to know. Now, if any of this upsets you in advance, then definitely don't go and see it. But if you like Mike Lee's universe, which I absolutely do, this is a potentially not quite as consequential film as Vera Drake or High Hopes or Life is Sweet, but still an amazing experience thanks to Sally Hawkins, and that's her.
Can you understand, though, the point of view of Stevie? Because that was really bad West End musical accent.
I can totally understand it, but she brings real warmth and humanity to it. It's not just an accent. Did you see Career Girls? Catherine Cartledge, who's sadly no longer with us, she played one of those unbelievable Cockney characters in that. She was speaking a bit like that all the way through. No one ever speaks like that in London. I've never heard them anyway. And she had that voice all the way through it, and it could have driven you mad. Mark Benton from the adverts was also in Career Girls.
Oh, is that right?
First time I ever seen him on screen.
Ah.
Yeah, he's very good in it. But nevertheless, Mike Lee does have a tendency to develop. You know how he develops his films. He sends the actors off with lots of clues, and they come back and they live the character. They do tend to pick up a Mike Lee accent somewhere along the way.
Do you get so when you first started watching it, so you're watching Happy Go Lucky, you notice the accent yourself, but sort of 15, 20 minutes in, was it easy to forget? Because the film is much better.
Yeah, for me it is. I've lived through his films. I think most of them are monuments. That, you know, life would be a very useless place without his films in them.
And films, these bad accents, they aren't limited to bad English accents. Some of the greatest actors I've ever seen have bad accents in films. Let me take you to the Untouchables and Sean Connery's Irish accent. I don't know what part of Ireland that was from. What part of Scotland that was Ireland, I think.
The only accent that Sean Connery can play is Sean Connery.
It's Sean Connery's accent.
That's okay,
accent.
You know. That's the only accent Cary Grant could play was Cary Grant. I don't think that's a problem. I really don't. Sally Hawkins, you know, she inhabits this part. It is an unusual Mike Lee kind of universe. It's much less depressing than some of his other films. I don't mean bad depressing. I mean good depressing, his other films. They usually have ironic titles, High Hopes, Life is Sweet. This one's got an absolutely literal title. And I'm not going to tell you what happens towards the end. You'll be expecting something, and you'll have to go and see it if you want to find out if that occurs or not.
Just quickly, Andrew, Happy Go Lucky, I always think it's important because I hear a movie and I'm thinking, is that for me? Who should go and see it? Who do you think is going to be the average age of the people who go and see Happy Go Lucky?
Obviously not young people. They're not going to go and see it.
Okay.
You know, I mean very young people. It's for grown-ups. It's a grown-up film.
Yeah.
You know, and it's set in North London, so if you live in North London, you better go and see it because it captures his areas of London very well, Mike Lee. I think probably women will enjoy it, because it's a female-centric film. It's about a group of women who are friends and get on really well. It's a really interesting portrait, I think, of women who get on well and aren't sort of students. They're all in sort of late 20s, early 30s. So it's an interesting portrait of that demographic. Maybe that will appeal.
I have to say, it's not working for me.
That's all right, Colin.
As you explain that demographic,
that's fine.
The all the warning signs, all the flags came out.
I enjoyed it.
Okay, let's swiftly move on from that. Tim has sent an email in. He thinks the best Bond's Daniel Craig, and he would just like me to say that it's 10 years to the day. So he says, you don't usually do shout-outs, but, you know, this is a cracker, he says. It's manna from heaven. It's 10 years to the day he met his wonderful wife, Lou, and she's forgotten. She will be listening. Please remind her and point out that I've remembered Steve Coogan live tonight in New York. There you
nice.
Go.
Nice. Hey, see, the romantic half of the couple is the man.
As always. Right, Nider sent this email in and says, saw In Bruges a few weeks ago in Dublin. It's pretty useful and it's beautifully shot, but early on I didn't think the script was sharp enough or as funny as I thought it was or needed to be. However, the storyline is nice and tight. Colin Farrell is really pretty good, and I'd watch Brendan Gleeson do the plumbing. P.S. Colin Farrell's from Irishtown, which is Southside Dublin.
Interesting.
He just likes to pretend he's from
See, I'm really fascinated by this kind of north-south divide.
It's
in
really
Dublin.
Good.
It's
that
interesting,
way.
Yeah. No, that's good fact, though.
It's very like London, you know, on yeah. north, way, south, oh, la-di-da.
Yeah, I'm a bit south.
In Bruges, is a beautiful city. Highly recommend a visit. I saw the trailer and didn't like the trailer, but thought the city looked nice.
Yeah, it did, and it does.
There you go.
Don't look at the posters. The posters are very kind of glamorous looking. Obviously you have to sell a film, yeah. but I'm not quite sure about the poster. It doesn't really reflect the film. It's
better
a bit more downbeat than the poster suggests.
Leon Wickford says you describe In Bruges and it sounds a bit like Pinter's Dumb Waiter. Are the similarities?
Interesting. Pinter, certainly, you know, the dialogue in this is high quality kind of, you know, theatrical dialogue. And, you know, the first half of the film could be on stage. So, you know, I'm all for that.
And Tony J, you talked about flashbacks of a fool. You really like that. He said slow start, but just very good by the end.
Yeah.
Is there a bit of a slow start to that?
Oh, yeah, it's deliberately slow. And so that's why the Pinter reference is very, very, very smart. Smart listeners.
And Gary in Belfast, good for you for just texting him what you think and not just going with what everyone else says. He says, you're right, Colin Farrell isn't hammy. He's just plain awful.
Yeah.
There you go.
He has been hammy. He has.
He has been at times. There you go. And you're talking about the way things are advertised and you say, oh, don't look at the poster for In Bruges. What about Happy Go Lucky? Because Stuart in Glasgow says it looks awful. I saw the trailer and it looks sickly sweet. You know, I don't know. Anyway, is it sickly?
It's not
sweet?
Sickly sweet, no, because she is if she was just, you know, happy because she was stupid or not engaged with the world, then that would be bad. But she is engaged. She's a primary school teacher. She loves her job. So, you know, she's not a kind of thin character. She's a very, very warm and a lot of depth to the character.
Okay. A couple more films we haven't talked about yet. One's a foreign language film. Should we do Botched first? Because
Botched is another Irish film, actually. I think it's maybe a co-production, but it's all set in Russia, which is very odd. And I think most of the cast are Irish, but they play Russians. It's a really, really weird film. The star, if I may use that term, is Stephen Dorff.
Stephen Dorff?
Yeah, who shot to fame in Backbeat, playing Stuart Sutcliffe.
Oh, yes.
Hasn't really done a great deal since of any note, and nor is this, sadly. Botched is about a robbery that goes wrong. Mm. But that's one part of it. They get trapped on this... It's in Moscow, set in Moscow. Clearly not filmed there. They get stuck in this disused floor of an office block, and there's a killer on the loose.
Yeah.
So it starts off as a heist movie with Stephen Dorff, and then it becomes this frankly stupid, preposterous comedy horror film with a massive amount of bloodshed and gore in it. I thought it was almost worthless.
You say it was Moscow was it meant to be shot in?
Supposed to be, but it all takes place on this disused floor of a building,
okay.
So frankly, it could be anywhere.
But I love that. The way you said that was like there was palm trees on the beach. Or
yeah,
you know what I mean? It was clearly not there. It looked much more like Barbados.
They blue-tacked up some Russian lettering onto the wall to make it look Russian.
So there's no redeemable.
If you like comedy horror, it's a very odd area. Now, I'm talking, you know, Shaun of the Dead is one thing altogether, because that's a very clever film. It's incredibly intelligent, and it loves its horror movies. This is one of those films that wants to be funny and scary at the same time, and it's so dull to say it, but it's unfortunately true yet again. It is neither funny nor scary.
Okay.
There's just lots of people getting their heads chopped off it, and some people get off on that. So I think if you're very young, you know, a teenager, you might think there's some sport to be seen in all these people getting killed one by one, but I just can't get into it. I like a horror film that's scary all the way through, you know.
Is it a 15, do you know?
It must be, yeah, it must be. It'd be a waste of time if it was any more than that.
Do you not think it's always a bad sign, though, when anything that has blood and gore in it is a 15?
It's a 15, yeah. When I was growing up, the horror movies were all X's.
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, what's the point of having a horror movie if it's not an X?
Couldn't get the Trailer Killer, could you?
Yeah,
Last
exactly.
House on the Left. You're not going to pick that up, you can't, no.
Yeah, so Botched is a silly film.
Yeah. Don't call a film Botched as well. If it's not very good, change the title before you. They must know. But there's some names you shouldn't give reviewers. Botched is one of them.
It's set in Russia, and even though it's a comedy horror, the characters speak in a Russian accent but say things like nut job. You know, Russians don't say nut job. Right. I don't know many, but I don't think they say nut job.
They don't say movies either. No. Right, let's move on to the last film we're going to look at. So Flashbacks of a Fool, you really enjoyed.
Yeah.
You thought,
bear in mind, you won't see a lot of Daniel Craig
in it, but Harry Eden, the young Daniel Craig,
carries it well.
Happy-go-lucky, very good
if
good
you
for the
like
ladies.
That kind of thing.
Okay, In Bruges, don't go by the poster. It's a much better film than that. Yeah. Colin Farrell, bit of a return to form if he's ever at that. And let's do Hope now.
Yeah, you'll have to seek this one out if you have a place that shows foreign language films. It is, if you are a fan of Three Colors Red, the Kieslowski trilogy.
A lot of students are, especially.
Yeah. Well, this is a third part of a much less well-known trilogy, written by the same writer, Krzysztof Pisewicz.
What were the other two called?
The first one was called Heaven, the second one was called Hell. This is called Hope, when it's really about redemption. It's one of those films full of symbolism. It's about a kind of angelic young man. There's a flash. It's all in flashback at the beginning, and then we get into the meat of the matter. His dad used to be a composer. After tragedy in his life, he now is a church organist. And some people nick this very, very beautiful religious painting from the church, and this young boy decides it is his job to get it back for his dad and restore, I presume, some kind of spiritual oneness to the lives of these people. It's you might say slightly pretentious.
Yeah, but you know, you're selling me in this.
I thought it was
a beautiful sell of that film.
It
sounds like it's worth hunting.
It's set in Warsaw, and I assume actually filmed there.
Was it in Warsaw?
A Polish film. I'm guessing it was. But it's not a kind of grey, gloomy picture of Warsaw. The colours are really saturated. There's a. It sounds dull to say it, but there's an important car in it that you see, and it's lime green, and the lime green just sings off the screen. Is it? And the grass is really green. It's really, really beautiful. Made, I think, by a first-time director called Stanislaw Mucha.
So the best. How does it come? Say In Bruges. You had so many nice things to say about how In Bruges was shot. I mean, is it on that level? Obviously, in a lower budget, but is it on that level?
Yeah, it's more kind of low key than that. But as I say, it has elements of beauty to it. It's not because it is a film about, you know, people with unhappy, damaged lives trying to restore some kind of order to their lives, and it has all these religious overtones, and it's quite unbelievable as well. Even though it's kind of shot in sort of realistic, sort of documentary way some of the time, it's not a realistic story, but you have to just go with it. And I enjoyed it more than I expected. And, you know, I've not seen the middle of this trilogy, but I saw Heaven, that had Cate Blanchett and Giovanni Ribisi in it, which was pretty good.
It flashes back at the start, and then it goes into real time and then the future.
It starts a little bit of tragedy in the family occurs at the beginning in flashback, which sets up the whole of the rest of the film.
What makes your heart sink most in a film? Because mine connects to that. Mine is when you turn on a film, you're looking forward to seeing it, you've been working hard, and the first scene gives away where it finishes, and then the whole film's in flashback. I don't care how good the movie is, I know what happens now. You know, so you see them there breathing their last breath.
I know what you mean.
You know, you see them there in the hospital bed. Well, you're alive, aren't you? You're alive, and then spend the next 2 hours you pretending you might die.
This one's safe bet. It just shows you what happened when they were kids, and then flashes forward to now when they are now grown up and young men. So yes, it is okay. It's in the right order.
What's your pet hate in films?
My pet hate in films is the film being explained. And in fact, there's a bit of that in Flashbacks of a Fool, I'm afraid, where people have great long bits of dialogue to explain what happened in the meantime. And you know, that's the worst part of the film, actually.
Andrew, I can't let you go until we clear up Farrellgate here. Fergal is not the only one who said he's not from Irishtown, the south side. He's from Castleknock on the north side.
Right. How complicated.
Get this, though. However, that is the poshest part of the north side you can get.
I like that. The poshest part of the right part.
The accent isn't right. Alan Ryan says it's exactly the same story. So we're going to go with Castleknock. We think that's right. He says again, the posh enclave on the north side. There you go. Well, listen, thank you very much for all your texts and emails that have came in, and just a lot of people talking about Connery's accent as well. Does he have a worse? Because Graham, for example, and Liam are saying it has to be the Scottish Spaniard. Highlander.
Or the Scottish Russian in The Hunt for Red October.
That's right. It's in the Russian submarine pool in there. I think we'll have to watch out. Thank you very much, Andrew Collins.
Thank you. It's been a great pleasure.
I'll see you again when M2 take a holiday.
Yeah, I don't mind. I wait, a couple of months if that's the way it's got to be.
For downloading from the BBC. To find other downloads or more information, go online.
bbc.co.uk/5live.